This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C, and this is the Breakfast Grill. The pandemic has shone a spotlight on the capacity of our public health and care infrastructure. But what about our private healthcare facilities? How have they been holding up? As this pandemic stretches on and is likely to turn endemic, how will the private sector evolve to meet these structural challenges? To share their perspective on today's panel, we have Dr. Kuljit Singh. He's the president of the Association of Private Hospitals Malaysia, short for APHM, as well as Nadia Wan. She is the Chief Executive Officer of Thomson Hospital Sdn Bhd and Group CEO of TMC Life Sciences Bhd. Welcome to the Breakfast Grill. We've had so many discussions about how the private sector has been involved in this whole pandemic management. And I want to bring us back to what happened in January when there was this announcement for the government to potentially take over private hospital assets, temporarily acquire land buildings from the private hospital. That didn't quite happen, right, Dr. Kuljit?
No, it did not quite happen. In fact, we met the Prime Minister in January. APHM met the Prime Minister in January. We had a lot of other issues that we wanted to discuss, and this is one of the issues that we actually brought up with the Prime Minister. And we gave our issue that private hospitals will work together with the government with the pandemic. There's no reason to take over any private hospital per se. And with or without the emergency ordinance, private hospitals have been willing enough to help the government sector in whichever way they wanted the private hospitals to help. For example, last year, there was a certain need of ventilators, which was probably not much needed as we compare to the numbers that we have today. But anyhow, there was a request made by the government that they would want to have ventilators, and 75 ventilators were provided from the private hospitals throughout the country. Each ventilator worth between 100 to 120,000 was given to the government for their use. Of course, the ventilators were returned back. It was no emergency ordinance at that point of time, and we were willing to help.
I mean, the picture now is that there are about 80 private hospitals that are involved in this outsourcing exercise of about 15,000 non-COVID patients. Nadia, I want to get your perspective. Do you think the best way the private sector can help is to lighten the burden for non-COVID-related cases?
Yeah, I definitely think that COVID is a national crisis that needs the public and private sector to come together. And the creation of beds, I mean, we've seen field hospitals, field ICUs. It's not so easy to build an ICU and a hospital bed from ground up. And really, the quickest, fastest, most efficient way for us to make more COVID beds is to actually clear out existing beds, pass that over to the private sector so that we can admit more COVID patients in the government hospitals. And that is what has been done in the Greater Klang Valley. And it has shown that within a short few weeks, the tremendous impact that we've had in terms of clearing pending ED cases, for example. So it's definitely something that makes use of the full healthcare capacity and infrastructure that we have in Malaysia. And it's the right way forward.
And I mean, this is a very interesting point because we're now seeing news that actually a pressure point on ICU beds has reduced quite a bit in the Klang Valley area. But Dr. Kuljit, you know, you made a very interesting point just now that, you know, the requirements and needs evolve very fast. Like when you said you needed ventilators initially, and now the requirements are changing. Is there some framework that has been established between the private and public with respect to how the cooperation can be a bit more crystallized or clearer?
Okay, there's never been a real concrete framework as far as the collaborative efforts between public and private. The public sector used to buy services from the private sector in a very ad hoc manner in the past. We have seen patients being sent from the public sector for certain services for whenever there is a need. But there was no real structured framework on a seamless manner. COVID has made this happen. I would say that it is as structured as it can get right now, because it was an emergency. Patients needed to be sent to the private hospitals quite immediately because they wanted to create space for their hospitals to treat COVID. So it worked out quite well. It was discussed, short discussions we had with the Ministry of Health. A circular was produced, cost was discussed, and a lot of private hospitals are actually willing to give a lot of discounts on the patients that are coming over to the private sector paid by the government.
And you're kind of inferring some kind of service level agreement and even transfer pricing mechanism that can be adopted between the private and public healthcare. Nadia, I want to get your perspective, right? When you think about the pricing regime here that's applied between private and public, is it a cost recovery mechanism or do you generally apply some margin here?
I mean, if we're talking about healthcare costs, the reality is that good healthcare costs a lot, and we import significantly a lot of things that we use in private healthcare, whether it is drugs or consumables. Now, the issue about accessibility and cost is really a matter of who bears the full brunt of that cost. Mm. In private, majority of the patients are using insurance, right? So they're paying for it out of a risk pool of money. And then the question comes for public sector patients then, is it time for us to look at a national health insurance scheme that would allow subsidies for patients who qualify for some sort of government support to be able to access care, whether it is in a public or a private hospital? So I think that of course, you know, we have during this crisis time, we know that it's a time where we need to band together. When we talk about decanting patients from government hospitals, there was no time to actually talk about assessing the cost, assessing the risk, looking at, you know, the actuarial part of it. What should the pricing be? So it was just a matter of national service where even the doctors and the hospitals were looking at, you know, we will sacrifice part of our fees. We're doing this just for national service, but that's not a long-term business proposition, right? And when we talk about sustainability. So I hope that when this crisis is over, that there are serious discussions about how we can use this platform. The mechanism is obviously there. It's working. We put it together, and I think in less than a few weeks. But the question is, how do we make this process or this model sustainable over the long term? And that is something that I think that we need to sit down together at a table and discuss it fully with an open mind.
And this point about national health insurance, where people can access both private and public, because the perception now is that the insurance that is being used in private hospitals really caters for the top 10% of the population. And how do you broaden it and widen it, right? What is stopping us from embarking and adopting that for the broader population, the national health insurance, then, in your view?
I think the important thing that everyone needs to realize that there is a cost for healthcare. In the public sector, the cost is fully paid by the government, and the same cost also applies in the private sector, like what Nadia said, that is also paid by someone, paid by the insurer or paid out of pocket. But the cost is probably pretty much the same. So if an ICU cost will cost you like 100,000 or 200,000, in a private hospital, it's actually costing the same in the public hospital, just that the patient does not know that that is the actual cost. And sometimes neither the public healthcare stakeholders know what is the exact cost, because the way public healthcare is calculated and maintained is very much different, because hospitals are built in public sector by a different budget, maintained by another budget, and the day-to-day cost is not calculated the way we calculate in the private hospitals. So in order for us to get actual sum, we really need to sit down and see what is the actual cost of treating a particular condition. Mm. We have it in private, but we do not have it in public. That's where the economic think tanks in the government sector need to really consider and do not label and say that, oh, it's very expensive in the private hospital, it's much cheaper in public. That is not really true. So when once you come up with that, then you can come up with a real healthcare financing scheme.
And could I just, yeah, sure. Go ahead, Nadia.
Could I just add that I think that stewardship and governance of the health insurance industry is something that needs some particular attention to. If you are familiar with how Obamacare was rolled out in terms of the legislation and policies that needed to be put in place, the agencies that were given supervision over health insurers, the terms and conditions that are subject to, for example, like, no, you can't exclude a person person for pre-existing conditions, for a certain band of insurance. All these things actually need to be talked about. And frankly, I think we have not really done so here in Malaysia, and the time would be right. I mean, our neighbours have, even Indonesia, have rolled out, in fact, a national health insurance scheme. But it's more than just talking about giving money or subsidizing the patients. It's also about the governance structure and the stewardship of how that industry will operate, which I think will be a big source of contention sometimes if it is not thought through properly.
Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have with us Dr. Kuljit Singh and Nadia Wan. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill today, we speak to Dr. Kuljit Singh from APHM and Nadia Wan from Thompson Hospitals. I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, how you've helped the public sector kind of lighten the burden. But eventually, as we go forward, we're having already conversations of booster jabs. We're having conversations about long COVID, right? How does the private sector look at these things?
See, the problem is right now for majority of insurance companies, I believe COVID treatment may not be covered and the patients are paying out of pocket. But having said that, I think from an operator perspective, COVID is here to stay, and I think it would be foolish actually to try and bury our heads in the sand and hope that it will all go away. And private hospitals, just like public hospitals, will have to actively manage COVID patients, you know, for time to come. We now have the Delta variant, there is already a Lambda variant, and there'll be multiple variants that are coming across. And so the reality is that COVID is amongst us. So that's the starting premise, right? COVID's not going to go away. What are we going to do to help manage this pandemic together? Because the public sector obviously cannot shoulder everything alone. And there are people who are willing to pay for COVID treatment in private services. I believe that all the COVID beds during the height of this crisis in all the private hospitals were actually full, ICU beds and general beds. So there's obviously was a demand for this service. It's just that moving forward, I think the operators will have to think about communicable diseases as being part of the stable of services that they offer. Because I think in the past, perhaps a lot of private hospitals were mostly focused on elective procedures, surgeries and scopes. And now I think many of us would be thinking about, well, we may have to set up an infectious disease ward because this may not be the only virus. So for Thompson Hospital, we started our COVID care initiative. We, in fact, today is the first day of operations for our COVID assessment and monitoring center, the second private CAC, I believe, in the Klang Valley. And, you know, in addition to screening, which many hospitals have done, we have been admitting COVID patients. And now we're talking about long COVID post-recovery patients. And so it's like an end-to-end journey with COVID. And many private hospitals have, in fact, actually stepped up and will be looking into how to incorporate these services into the long-term plans.
I mean, there are these concerns of, you know, purported profiteering. And as, I mean, I think both of you are aware, you've seen the WhatsApp messages of bills hitting 500,000, 600,000. And Dr. Kuljit, do you think this is the time when the government has to step in and lay a regulatory framework, a pricing cap to many of these COVID services? Or do you think markets should just lead it and drive it forward?
I think for the private sector is, I think you have to leave it to the market forces. And most of the private hospitals, they are quite sensitive to the cost because it's a business, no doubt. But at the same time, they are very concerned of not having the price to a level which is unaffordable or it becomes an issue. We must always think that COVID is not like any special disease. It is actually an infectious disease that primarily, predominantly affects the lungs. Now, as a doctor, I can tell you that, you know, any other viral infection will behave the same way. When it gets infected in the lung, you get a pneumonia, and some of the pneumonia can be pretty irreversible. Many of the viruses behave like that. So we do not treat COVID so special that it is more expensive to treat COVID when you compare to any other lung infection or viral etiology. So the treatment costs in an ICU and the post-ICU care would be expensive. It is not because of profiteering. It is mainly because the cost of care. And like what Nadia mentioned just now, big bulk of what we buy in Malaysia for our healthcare is actually procured from overseas. So in the exchange rate, we end up having to pay quite a bit. Equipment, high-range kind of medications. We don't have a medical equipment industry in Malaysia. We do have generics for medication, but they do not cover certain high-grade medication that you need for an ICU setting. So when you put in all together, there is a cost. And I said earlier, the same cost applies to the public sector, just that we do not know what is the cost. In fact, I may say that it might even cost more to treat a patient in intensive care in a public sector, because they have bigger manpower and the procurement methodology may be a little bit different. Mm. So in that sense, private hospitals actually procure their procurement in more effective manner because they are running a business. So what you pay is actually not much. If you compare to our neighboring countries, you can see that actually we are still one of the lowest. Of course, it may not be the right way to compare them. Per capita income may be different. But we can see this out of medical tourists. Medical tourists pick Malaysia for treatment over the other countries recently because of that, for that real reason. We are still cost effective.
Yeah, I also want to jump in on that point because that bill has gone viral, right? But people yes. often forget there's that small type that says ICU stay for 40-something days.
48 days.
And I think people don't realize that with COVID, unfortunately, you end up having to need intensive care for a relatively long time. And that care is actually really expensive. The drugs that are being used, whether in public or private, being imported at thousands of ringgit per vial. And, you know, that cost is unfortunately really expensive. So, well, I mean, the reality is we do need to do something about reviewing whether we can actually develop some of these technologies domestically. Even rapid test kits for COVID are imported. You can see the list of approved saliva test kits in the MDA. None of them are made in Malaysia. So just imagine, from all the basic things that we need, from diagnosis all the way to high-end treatment, we've had to import. And depending on how the currency is doing at whatever moment of the day, that cost has to be transferred on to consumers. So definitely we're at the losing end. And I think that many countries after this pandemic would definitely look at developing the domestic medical equipment supply and pharmaceutical sectors as a matter of national importance and national security. Started off with manufacturing of PPEs, which I think many countries have now domesticated. And certainly we hear that countries like Vietnam, for example, has vaccine candidates that are going into clinical trials. So everybody wants to be able to secure domestically the supply of these important items that are vital in managing the COVID pandemic. And we should not be left behind on that.
It is important that the men in the street need to understand that, because normally they would look at a bill and the size of the bill and the perception goes based on the bill that private healthcare is so expensive. But they do not understand that what they see in that bill is actually not as expensive as they would have thought, because a lot of discounts are sometimes given and we have to pay. In private healthcare, we do not have financing given by the government. Everything is on our own. So if a bill of 300,000 for a 48-day stay, it means $80,000. And in the United States, you will never get a 48-day ICU care at $80,000. And, you know, and everything that we buy is actually from overseas. So it's actually, if you ask an American, the American will be thoroughly surprised that we can actually give a care of that level at that particular cost, buying equipment and drugs, medications from them. So I'm just giving an example. We are effectively, I would dare say this is actually very affordable.
The death rates actually has been relatively low. So the effectiveness of the care being given is actually no worse than what you would get from a first world country, I would dare say. I mean, this person walked away after 48 days in the ICU.
It's a very interesting point you bring up, you know, because we hear so many conversations about the cost of medication in Malaysia, and we've seen the numbers, you know, driven by high inflation rates and so on and so forth. But I'm sure that's driven partly by the nature of specialization in our aging population and so on and so forth. But Nadia, you know, your perspective, right? Should we not then require a publication of outcomes, of medical outcomes, to show that we deliver value to the services we offer, because it's something I feel we do lack, right, in terms of publishing medical outcomes.
Yeah, I think that's a function of two things, actually. The first thing is being able to collect that data in the first place. It's sometimes very difficult to do if you don't have an electronic medical record system, for example, because obviously you can't collect data when it's in multiple paper folders and then try and do that analysis. So that's one. Mm. Number two is having an agreed upon set of indicators and outcomes that would be fair for everyone. And here, I think this is where we come back to the issue of governance and stewardship. If we did have, let's say, a national health insurance and you had the government being one of the biggest payers, they would obviously want to measure the value of what the outcomes that the patients are going and having those indicators. Many insurance companies now, when we have discussions with them, do talk about things like this. They look at certain diagnoses, the procedures that are being done, what's the average cost, average length of stay, readmission rates. Those conversations we're starting to have with the major insurers, and it's only a matter of time that I think that this will be brought to the attention at a national level, and we should be talking about this. But obviously, it may be a sensitive issue, and there'll be a lot of debates about what are the indicators and the source of data being used. But I think we have to start somewhere. And I dare say that many Malaysians should be proud about the quality of care that they're actually getting in the country versus the cost that is being paid. As Dr. Kuljit said, in many countries, it would be 5 times, 10 times more than what Malaysians are paying for now.
Care is something that's going to happen. It is already occurring in many countries. On one small perspective of the private healthcare is they look at the doctors in other parts of the world and see what kind of clinical outcomes they are rated in certain web pages. And I think hospitals also will be rated in that manner. So people will know what they're paying for in that sense, you know. So I think that is going to be definitely in the near future. Not far future, but in the near future.
Let's hope so, because we should shift away from the classic referral system. Like, I know this doctor and is very good at that. And if we can shift towards a more structured way of communicating outcomes, I think that would be super helpful. On a special extended breakfast grill today, we speak to Dr. Kuljit Singh, President of the Malaysian Private Health Association, and Nadia Wan, Chief Executive Officer of Thompson Hospitals. When we come back from the 8:30 news bulletin, the future business model of the private healthcare sector.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back. On this special extended Breakfast Grill today, we speak to Dr. Kuljit Singh from APHM and Nadia Wan from Thompson Hospitals. Now, just before the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, we were discussing on the business of pandemic management. Now, I just want to shift our attention to the business of private healthcare. 2020 was a tough year, I'm sure. 2021, I presume, we're also heading into a bit more of a challenging period. Can I just get your perspective, right? If you look at the healthcare ecosystem, do you see certain sections or segments of the private healthcare struggling more than others? For example, smaller clinics versus the larger ones. Nadia, you're nodding your head vigorously.
Okay, so I'm, you know, TMC Life Sciences Berhad has different businesses. We have Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara, but we also have TMC Fertility, Thompson TCM, and TMC Care Pharmacy. Now, obviously, things that are elective, like fertility services, have definitely, I think, suffered a drop, both because people are probably delaying planning for pregnancy during a pandemic, but also due to the closure of borders. Malaysia has had very successfully marketed itself as a medical tourism destination for a few key specialties like fertility, cardiac surgery, now oncology as well. And with the closure of the borders, some of our branches, particularly in Penang and Johor, have actually suffered quite a drop. As you know, Penang is one of the medical tourism hubs in Malaysia, and easily, I think, 50% of their cases before this were actually medical tourists from nearby countries such as Indonesia. And for Johor, there was a lot of Singaporeans or Malaysians working in Singapore who were crossing the border for treatment. So there has definitely been an impact, I think, particularly for some of the more elective type of procedures. And I think what's happening is that people are perhaps rebalancing a little bit. Because at the end of the day, we do have a pool of trained healthcare workers. So, for example, you know, in TMC Fertility, we are looking at fertility services, ONG, but also looking at how perhaps we can help vaccinate pregnant mums, right? So that's also another healthcare service that we can do. So we're fortunate that healthcare is in demand. And even though we specialize in certain things, it doesn't mean that during a crisis, you can't pivot and provide a service that is in need by the community. And hopefully when the borders reopen, when population is sufficiently vaccinated, we would be in position to actually ride that wave again, because there would be a pent-up demand, right, from all those people delaying their pregnancies and now looking to start a family again. So that's kind of the balance that we have to play. But I think that some of the smaller standalone players, perhaps like GPs, for example, the discussion now is to try and involve them more in home monitoring of patients who are isolating at home. And these are some of the new services that have emerged, I think, during the pandemic. And again, it may be that one door closes and another door opens up.
And does this inform the future business model where you know, private hospitals tend to house all sorts of specializations? Nadia, do you see a decentralization where perhaps a center is specializing on two or three things, another one focuses on that? Do you think that is the model going forward, where we see decentralized operations that are more specialized in different facilities?
I think that specialization has been going on for some time, right? So if we look at TMC, I mean, TMC Fertility is just focused on reproductive medicine. But I think for tertiary, quaternary care, you still need to have a comprehensive setup, because the patients that need those kind of acute care, they don't come in with just one problem. They come in with multiple problems, right? Even with COVID, the people who run into complications, by and large, have some sort of underlying issue. Either they have a comorbidity, they are obese or overweight, or they're pregnant. And you do need multiple people who are multidisciplinary to kind of manage those kind of patients. But where I see this kind of going in the future is that perhaps you will have much more of personalization. Patients are actually now becoming quite used to being monitored at home, have some sort of basic gadgets like oximeters, maybe blood pressure monitors, thermometers. So we can track some of the basic parameters perhaps when they're at home, and being able to give them more timely advice. And then when they do need to come in, for example, just like COVID patients now, if they do need to come into a CAC, we can assess them. But, you know, if they're roughly okay, we can monitor their recovery at home, and people are more comfortable with that. And both the public and the private hospitals have actually significantly invested to upgrade the digital infrastructure that allows that to happen. So one thing that has come out of COVID is that definitely the investment in technology infrastructure has increased. I mean, MySejahtera did not exist 2 years ago, and it is really now being used to monitor, collect information on patients. And, you know, that is being passed on to sort of like home monitoring. So we have had to set all this infrastructure up. And obviously, we're not just going to let it go to waste. When this COVID pandemic settles down, we'll start thinking about, well, what else can we use this digital infrastructure for? And obviously things like non-communicable diseases would come into mind, because that is something where you need also chronic sort of like long-term management. So there are a lot of good things actually that have come out from the pandemic. And I hope that the momentum of this change actually continues and that we don't let that go to waste.
And I do want to just end with a question to you, Dr. Kuljit, because Nadia was alluding to that, you know, for a lot of hospitals to reorientate themselves, they will require investments, investments in digital, investments in how they also reorientate and restructure their operations as well. Do you think the government needs to provide facilitation funding to make that happen? Or can we just rely on capital markets and banks to provide loans and so on and so forth? Because we've seen a flurry of good deals, right, with GIC investing in Sunway. So there are opportunities for the bigger players. But my concern is more the smaller players as they try to readjust in this new normal.
I think we would love to propose this to the government so that after what we have learned from COVID, I always say COVID has some amount of silver lining in the cloud that we have actually learned. Without COVID, then I wouldn't be speaking to you like this. I would be sitting right in front of you in your studio. So in the same manner, I think we have to now try to convince the government that, look here, this is something that they need to actively reach out to the private sector to encourage them to go into digitalization. All this while, there has been a dichotomy between the public and the private healthcare. Once you are in private healthcare, then you're on your own. And when, once it is in public healthcare, they are on. There's a very broad margins or lines that they are drawn. Mm-hmm. But I think with this, what we have gone through in these 2 years, I'm saying 2 years because it's going to go till the end of this year. Hopefully 2022, we don't see it. I think as far as APHM is concerned, I think we are going to approach the government in many areas from taxation right up to incentive. How you can incentivize the private sector in digitalization. And I think they would be able to see the value now because the value has been apparent using digitalization. And of course, they are also going all out in other industries using digitalization technology. They are going to go full blast in 5G. I understand once this pandemic is over, it is supposed to be launched last year and it is not picked up yet because of the pandemic. I think we can definitely work together and I see good days coming along after the COVID and there could be more receptive to new ideas and working together is definitely one way forward.
Health shouldn't be just Ministry of Health. Like I feel really strongly about that because in dealing with this pandemic, I think it would, if we did not have other ministries involved, it would be a disaster. I think that's what we saw in Klang Valley is that we had to reach out to a lot of stakeholders. And so, you know, on the topic of facilitation, like when they look at health as a sector, it's not just about hospitals. I mean, when we looked at COVID, what were some of the issues? Manpower was definitely an issue. Beds was an issue. But things like oxygen and ambulances were an issue. Mm. And that actually was more under the manufacturing and logistics part as well.
And on that note, today on The Breakfast Grill, we had Dr. Kuljit Singh and Nadia Wan on a panel discussion about the private healthcare sector in Malaysia. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.